Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance beneath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are
what's up, what's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and we've got a new member of the Bubba family, a new guest today, and that's going to be David Losshelder, the author of Take Care of Number One So You Don't Step at Number Two. Love the title, love the thought. And David, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot, Ty. I appreciate it.
It's great to have you here. So, David, why don't you take us through a little bit who you are? I know you've got a very extensive background, and you've done a lot of things that all relate to business and, you know, some in the psychology parts of business and other things. So take us through who you are.
Yeah, I started off as an athlete, and I was trying to make the Olympic team when I was younger, and one of my, you know, major goals was to win win a national championship, and so I embarked on that. I did a lot of training nationally, internationally, and I was able to win five national events, but unfortunately, they were all in third place. So I never actually reached the goal of national championship. And so with other international medals and things like that, I was able to have points and things that they you gain. And so I was able to reach number one in the country for a couple of years in the early 90s. And so with that, I retired from competition, never made the Olympic teams. Unfortunately, there were people that were better than me. And so I retired, and I started to think, you know, with the coach, and I was like, what was the problem? What does it take to, reach that next level? Because I was never able to kind of make that jump from third to first. And so I started to do a lot of research. I got a degree, went to graduate school, got a degree in psychology, put together some things, and I started to realize there are certain things that people do, and there are certain ideas and psychology that actually make it work. And so I started to teach this to the kids and the people I was coaching, and then eventually I took it out to the whole, business people and things like that. And so these people started to say, wow, this is really good stuff. And I started to realize this wasn't just for athletes. This was for business people. This was for people that were struggling with their teams, people that were struggling with change leadership and that type of thing. So I started to teach that. And eventually I just launched a company, 3LG Solutions, to kind of help this even further. So that's the kind of thing that I've been doing for a while. And it's been quite successful. So I'm really excited to kind of share that with others.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, as you look at your part as an athlete, I mean, that, you know, that is a lot of things that companies and people look for, are people that are able to compete. What was your sport?
Judo.
Judo.
Yeah, judo guy. I was also a wrestler as well, but real big in judo. Yeah,
I hope I don't meet you in a dark alley. I get my butt kicked. But anyway, so, but I mean, athletics is extremely important in all walks of life, and I think that it does. It helps people become better employees, better bosses. And, you know, again, it's the whole team and understanding what you're trying to do. So now you're building your career into helping and creating opportunities for others and showing them better ways to do things. Is that correct?
Yeah. It's, you know, there's a system of approach that I've been using for individuals to kind of take them over the hump. And the book I wrote, was really based upon the first part of the book was really based upon like the barriers that people have, because I've seen that, like I said, in athletes, but I've also seen it in business people and even in myself. So, we all have barriers. Well, we're afraid of fear. Why do people, why they really don't do anything because they're afraid, right? There's conditioning. There's things that, over the time where, you get conditioned over time where you're not able to do it because you've been knocked down so many times. You know, a good example of that would be, there was a study done with a dog. It was back in 1967. Two psychologists, and they took a box, and it was a shuttle box, they called it. They took this dog, they put the dog in a box, and it would shock the floor. And so the dog would get shocked on one side and jump over to the other side. And then they would shock the other side, and he would jump back and forth. And so eventually, they took out the centerpiece, and they would shock the entire floor. This dog would just continue, and whenever where the dog went, the dog got shocked. And so eventually, the dog just turned over on his belly, his back, and just whimpered and just gave up. And it turned out that was what they called learned helplessness. And we see that in business where, you know, the employee is you know, we say they're empowered, right? But, you know, then they do something and they say, oh, you can't do that. And they want to try something and say, well, you can't do that. And then pretty soon, the employee just gives up because, like, I really want to try this stuff, but I don't have the opportunity to expand my knowledge and my skill set because I'm thwarted by, you know, my supervisor or the manager or the director. And so that causes, it handcuffs a lot of businesses because their leaders are so controlling and they micromanage everything. And so their employees become disempowered. And so you see that over and over and over again, where the leadership part is really to empower people to let them try, let them fail, learn from their mistakes, and let them kind of move on and encourage them to keep trying. That's how you build. And so that was kind of one of the ideas of the book, was to look at over, try to get over the barrier. And then you can start really kind of looking into the other principles.
Well, yeah, I mean, there are a lot of barriers that are created by business, and you mentioned micromanaging and things like that. I mean, one of the problems that I've noticed in my life is that the upper echelon or the bosses a lot of times, either sometimes have an agenda that try to keep people down, but the other thing is they really don't know how to manage people and let them spread their wings and become better than they are. And I think that's one of the issues that gets handled in business all the time as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it happens all the time. And I think that, you know, once people learn that they need to build the culture from the bottom up, you know, people are really good. Like, business is really good with, like, technical piece, right? There's technical and there's process, and they're really good at that. But then the problem is the people show up. And from there, they're not able to take that technical and process piece, and they try to push it down or force it. And it doesn't work. It doesn't work when you're forcing something on somebody instead of taking the people and building a culture that's able to buy into it. And that's where it's the important part of when you're embarking on especially change, transformational change. You really have to have people buy into this because the whole culture, it's a big ship, right? And so, you know, a speedboat can move back and forth very quickly because there's only a couple people on the speedboat. Speedboat's small. But then you have a large ship. That takes a very long time to turn that ship around. And so, you know, there's more people on that ship. It's a larger entity. So you have to have people buy into the idea, the philosophy, and the concepts. And then the technical and process piece can be implemented in a very slow, methodical way. And they can and you need a process to do that, and that's how that, you know, that's how things change. And if 70% of all change initiatives fail worldwide,
we're gonna pick that up. We'll pick that change up when we come back from the break. We are with David Losshelder, former Olympian, attempted Olympian athlete in judo, but the author of the book "Take Care of Number One, So You Don't Step in Number Two," and it's. Great to have him on, and I think he'll bring in a lot of good insight, especially for those of you who trade and invest, because I've already got some ideas I want to ask him about when we get back. But this is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Make sure you go to libertytalk.fm and download the show every single day, as well as The Sporting Edge on the weekends, which is now hosted by Xander. We're going to step out of here for a break. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz, with David Losshelder, the author of Take Care of Number One, So You Don't Step at Number Two, The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back after the break. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with David Losshelder, from the author of take care of number one so you don't step in number two. And also, former Olympia trial athlete trying to get through, a big judo fan and a big judo expert. So, David, you were telling us about some of the pitfalls and things that happened during the cycle and how it always works easily when it's done, like, on paper or in theory, but when you get into real life, it doesn't work as well. Please continue.
Yeah, you know, it's like I said before, 70% of all change initiatives fail, and that's across the board. And you ask yourself, you know, why is that? And so, and the reason is, like I mentioned, was that the culture is not engaged. The people that are part of that culture are not engaged. It's usually when someone, you know, forces something from the top down, and they say, you know, you need to do this X, Y, and Z. And usually that just doesn't work because the changes are too big, especially a transformational change. And so the other reason is 29% of those businesses don't have a clear plan to implement that change. So not only does 70% fail, but they don't even have one third of them don't have a specific plan to make that change happen. And to drive that change. So it's really, you know, if you look at leadership and you look at the ability to be able to, you know, change yourself and change others, then you really have to kind of go within and to really kind of find out, who you are and be mindful of that. And that's one of the things that we do with my company is to really help people kind of go within and say, you know, look, you know, what's stopping you? And let's get over those barriers and let's find some techniques and some ideas that you can kind of move forward. So, you know, the first one is commitment. You have to be able to say, okay, look, there's total commitment with this. So if you don't commit, then it's like a light bulb. A light bulb, you know, either turns it off or on. You can't just turn a light bulb on halfway, you know, unless you have a dimmer, but let's not talk about that. And so, you have this light bulb that you have to say, okay, I'm going to do this, and we're clear about this. But you know, you can be committed, but if you don't know what to do, that's another issue. So we talk about goals. So you have to be committed, then you have to have very clear, specific goals. And we've all heard this 1,000 times, right? It's like, you know, I was talking to a bunch of sales executives, and I got there, they brought me in, and I said, you know, I weep at the fact that we talk about goals, and I really don't really agree with them. And the head guy there, he was in the back, real big shot. I thought he was going to just slide under his table, like, oh my, like I brought this guy in, and he's talking about the goals are idiotic. And I said, no, I said, listen, I said, we all talk about them, but we don't know how to use them. We don't know how to set them in very specific ways, and if you don't do it, you can set them, but if you don't motivate yourself to get those goals, you're not able to kind of reach them. So then you have to have this idea of focus. So if you have to be focused on, and see there's a problem, people have set these really great goals, but they have 15 of them, and there's too many. And so if you have too many goals, you can't focus on 15. Do you have to have at least, you know, maybe two, at the most four, but you got to be able to focus on those every single day and do something towards them to achieve them, to kind of make that work. Now, and so
go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you. Go ahead.
So, you know, so you have this commitment, you have this focus, you have these goals, and then you have to have this, what I teach, you know, my clients is the self-talk to be able to kind of each and every day believe this is going to happen. The best leaders in the world believe they can do it, and they communicate that to others, so they're believing it wholeheartedly, and it's like it's going to work. It's not a matter of if, you know, it's a matter of when, and so they're able to say, you know, look, you know, this is going to work. We're going to do this, and things are going to get in your way. I mean, if you don't think things are going to get in your way, then you have a real problem because you have to look at anticipate some of these issues. And it's like a football. It's like in football, you have a running back who has, you know, these huge angry men in front of him. If he thinks he's going to get to the goal line easily, he's crazy. So he's going to get hit, beat down. But eventually, over time, he's able to make you know, 1 yard, 3 yards, 4 yards, and then he can get to the goal. It's no different with business and with individuals. You have to be, you have to like to get beat up a little bit to get to that point.
Now, don't you think one of the problems with goals is that obviously you set too many of them, but don't a lot of people have a tendency to set goals that are unattainable? And isn't it important to be able to attain a goal that you're setting?
Yeah, I think in the short term, I think that, you know, when, you know, I think that has to be realistic and attainable. And I have to agree with to at that point where, you know, if I wanted to be, you know, an Olympic figure skater, well, you know, I'm in my mid-40s. I'm not, first of all, I don't know how to skate at all. So, you know, for me to become an Olympic figure, it's just not going to happen. I'm also not a musician, so you're not going to put me in Carnegie Hall either. So, you know, that's all part of it. But then the other part of it is that, you know, thinking big, you may not have the skill now to reach that goal, but if you keep working at it over time, then you eventually will have that maybe have the skills to reach that big goal. And if you don't think big, then you're not going to be able to reach anything. You know, think of it this way. If I'm a leader and I'm not thinking big, then who's going to think big for me? You know, I'm the leader. Like I need to make big, you know, huge goals to say, look, you know, we can move forward, and then build the people around me to be able to reach these huge goals. It might seem unattainable now. I mean, Kennedy, back in the 60s, you know, they didn't even have like the types of metal to build within the rocket to make it to the moon, and he said we're going to go to the moon within a decade. And they did, you know, so it's, you know, that they didn't have those things back in the 60s, but they had to, you know, design them and build them and make them and figure out how to do it. And by 1969, we were on the moon. So it's that type of, you know, ideology and leadership that really is super important.
Okay, so I understand that, but what I'm saying is that, you know, he set that goal, as you said, 10 years, within the next decade, we're going to do this. But if you're starting out, I mean, if you're a salesman, you start out with, you know, my first goal for the first quarter is I want to be 5% over quota. I mean, if you say in the first quarter I want to be 1,000% over quota, that's not very realistic and not very attainable. That's what I'm getting at. Is that kind of how you talk about setting goals, or is that incorrect?
No, I think it's correct. I think, you know, if you're, I mean, it's the same factor. It's the same idea. So you're a salesman. And so salesmen, you know, they, you know, when you first start out, you may lack the skill of an experienced salesman. So, you know, that 5%, you know, you need to call on, you know, 100 people, you know, to get a 5%, you know, sales return. But the experienced salesman may have to call on 50 people. And just because they have more skill. And so, you know, so if they call on 100 people, the experienced salesman, then they're going to get 10 sales. You know, so it's the ratio of, you know, your skill set with, you know, with how hard you work towards something. And I think that's kind of more akin to more of a sales idea.
Okay, and I mean, that makes sense. You know, I teach people how to trade, and I'm a trader, and I go, you know, being a trader is kind of like being a door-to-door salesman. You're going to get kicked in the teeth a lot, but you have to send something that is realistic that you can attain, and you continue to grow. And as you get better, your goals get bigger, and but you got to be able to, I think emotionally, people need to be able to reach a goal so that they can keep that good inner spirit going. What do you think?
Yeah, I think, you know, when... It's like losing weight, right? You know, it's like, okay, I want to lose 25 pounds. And nobody ever loses 25 pounds, right? It's like, because, you know, you start off and it's like a week goes by and, you know, you maybe you don't lose anything. Maybe you lose 1 pound. And it gets very discouraging because you're thinking 25. Instead of saying, you know, if I lose 1 pound a week for 25 weeks, so each week I step on the scale and I'm like, oh, man, it's like, I lost a pound and a half this week. Well, then you just exceeded your goal. You're all pumped, and you stay motivated, and you stay disciplined with it. And I think that's where, you know, when it comes to sales or losing weight or trying to, you know, building a business or whatever, that type of stuff, you know, those small incremental
A small agricultural change. I got to cut you shorter. We'll pick this up when we come back from the break. This is David Losshelder, author of Take Care of Number One So You Don't Stop at Number Two. And we're going to get his company information when we come back. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We're going to stop out here for a break. We'll be right back after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Todd Bubba Horowitz with David Losshelder from the author of Take Care of Number One So You Don't Step in Number Two. And of course, David, you were telling us about those incremental changes and how you move forward. And, you know, we use losing weight as an example. Please finish your example, and then I've got some other stuff for you.
Yeah, you know, I mean, when you're kind of looking at incremental changes, you know, you want to set, you know, certain milestones where, you know, say, okay, you're able to kind of, you can get discouraged very quickly. And with any change, you need to have a really clear plan and have short-term goals and know, you know, and be able to measure this stuff. You know, you can't manage what you don't measure. And so as you're measuring it, you know where you are. So if you're moving closer or further away from your goals, then you're able to make that adjustment. And so, you know, a plane, you know, you've heard the analogy that a plane leaving, let's say, Pittsburgh to, Fort Lauderdale, for example. It's usually off course in the major part of the time, a major percentage of the time. But the pilot, you know, makes adjustments and they make little corrections, and then eventually they land on a dime when they get to Orlando or Florida or whatever. So it's that type of idea where you got to measure it to make it work. If you just set it and just try, then you don't know where you are. You don't have a GPS telling you, you know, where exactly you are in this process.
All right, David, tell me about your company now, because I know I've talked about your book, but tell us about the company and give us a name and all the information about your company.
Yeah, it's a new company. It's called 3LG Solutions, LLC. And what we do is we help people and companies with culture change and engagement strategies, leadership strategies, leadership skills. And we want to help companies with the issue of transformational change and changes that are happening. We can come in, and we have certain tools and techniques that can help them through that by helping build their cultures and make that change and beat that 70%. So yeah, that's kind of our measure, where we want to make sure we come in and we're able to kind of say, look, you're here. You want to be from here to there. Then let's work on this. Let's work with your people, and let's kind of work this over time. And eventually, you know, you could be very successful.
And I agree with all of that. And of course, but I do believe, in my personal opinion, is a lot of this comes starting at a very young age. And I think that I don't think that we educate our children well enough in things like this. And I think this would be much better served if we started, instead of having this ridiculous Common Core curriculum, if we started going back to teaching kids to understand how some of the things, these things work, because I think they fit right into what you're kind of teaching and what you're bringing up. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, if you look at technology and you see how the world has changed and everything is so instantaneous, you know, look, if I want to know something, you know, I'm not going to ask somebody. I'm going to go to Google. You know, and things are just so easy now that it's like when things become difficult, and you talk about the Common Core and how they're training children. you know, I think with the Common Core, the idea of that is they're training kids how to think. And I think it's a good concept. But I also think that the school system, it needs to kind of look at the current a culture of how our society works with technology, and marry that with that, and so some of the stuff I think they're teaching is antiquated, frankly, but I think that you can take that same information and make it more akin to how are we going to live in the next 10, 20, 30 years, because technology is we're going to be acting differently and behaving differently because we have the technology, and we'll be thinking differently that way. So it's really kind of an idea of looking at, you know, what the environment has for us, what it's going to have for us, and how do you plant that and supplant that into the curriculum to be able to make someone very successful, be able to behave and to act and to understand, you know, how to use this stuff. So you know, everybody can kind of function better. And so I think that's where it comes from. So I agree that it's important to look at education, to look at where we are now and where we're going to be. And I think that's the most important part of education right now.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, I have a curriculum that I run through financial literacy for kids. And, you know, I obviously see this in the adult population all the time, that they are not financially literate. And of course, that's why we have these market collapses. And of course, a lot of this ties back to exactly what you do, because if you can learn to take care of the emotional side of your business when you're trading or you're investing or whatever you're doing, and you can learn to use the goal model in which you're talking about, I think that it helps people become more successful, because most of the skills in life are trainable. You know, again, you can't train somebody to be Michael Jordan. You can't train somebody to be the best athlete in the world. A lot of that's inborn. But you take a guy like a Michael Jordan, and not only was he the best of his time, but he was also the hardest worker, and he understood the things that you're trying to teach. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, you brought something up that sparked something. It's like, you know, what are we, you know, when we go to school, what are they actually teaching kids to do? And it's really, it was teaching them how to become an employee. When we talk about investing and finance, you know, I don't think they do a real good job with that, because they're missing the other parts of it. You know, are they teaching small business skills? Are they teaching business skills? Are they teaching investing skills? You know, all that, I don't see that in the education system. You know, it's one quadrant, and that's the employee, and that's really kind of way back to, you know, my dad worked for the same company for 45 years, retired from the same company, 45 years. That's unheard of now. I mean, people have, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, 9 jobs, and that's probably even in the same career. I mean, so there's the transferable skills are going to be really important too, to have people understand that they need to learn how to take the skill they have and transfer them to different parts of industries and things like that. And I think that's something that, you know, we kind of missed the boat on. We're still, it's really antiquated when it comes to, you know, here, you know, you go to school, you learn your lessons, you get a job, and then before it was like you get a job and you retire from that company. Now it's like, you get a job, you work for a couple years, you get another job, or for 3 years, get another career, you know, that type of thing. So I think that's the important part of, I think, what you're trying to say too as well.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, you know, I'm a big fan of people, you know, creating a decent career. I think that a lot of people make a mistake. They continue to jump around, because if they were using the methods that you teach and the methods that you wrote in your book, you would learn to be happy where you were. And I think that's one of the problems of that people feel the emotion and they get disengaged. You know, it's the old story, right? The grass is greener somewhere else, which is the truth is that if you take care of number one, the grass is the same color no matter where you go. What do you think?
Yeah. You know, I mean, you're 100% right about that, because I think that, this day and age, if you look at, I'll bring up an example not healthcare, but just in terms of health, as an example. You know, we the Americans have, and I don't mean negative about this, but you know, we spend like $146 billion worth of health care and the benefits, and we're the unhealthiest country, or one of the unhealthiest countries in the world. And so, you're looking at that, saying, okay, are you really taking care of yourself? Because not only is it just health, it's also mental health, physical health. And if you're not able to kind of take care of yourself first, you can't take care of others. And so if you're looking at that perspective, if we're going to build a society of strength and we're going to make America great again, right? Then we're going to have to look at ourselves first and be accountable for that and say, I need to take care of me and build my skills. If I'm stronger, then I can give back tenfold to someone else. And so and that's what we're kind of doing now. Now, all our experiences and skills and ideas are being shared to a whole bunch of people. And that's real success, because I think that we really need to be able to share that. But you got to be able to build those skills first, take care of yourself, and then be able to offer that to others. And that can be, that can be tenfold, a hundredfold, a thousandfold, and then you have a whole bunch of other people better off because you took the time and energy to work on yourself.
And I could not agree more. I think that it has a lot to do with the self-help and the direction that you take, and I think that would create a lot better and a lot stronger relationships with others as well if we would learn to take care of number one, which is ourselves, I think, and to be in a position to be much stronger, because then you learn, I think, to deal with the hand that you have in front of you versus always trying to look for that brand new hand. And I think that's something that has become an issue. Even if you go into the election, I don't care who you voted for, it doesn't matter. But the point is, everybody was concerned, well, the guy that got elected, he doesn't have any experience. Well, maybe his experience is going to be better for everybody instead of worse. We don't know that, but you can't, you have to have the confidence and the ability to go forward and try to trust something else. And I think that's something that comes back. And we'll talk about more of that when we come back from the break. We're with Davis Losseller and the author of Take Care of Number One So You Don't Step in Number Two. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. Make sure you go to libertytalk.fm and download the show every day. We're looking to get to 300,000 downloads a month. I need your help, so get there and download them. Let's go. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be right back after the break with more from David. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz.
After 10,000 beers.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz, with David Losseller, the author of Take Care of Number One So You Don't Step at Number Two, and also the owner of a brand new company, which is, let me get the name exactly correct, and that is 3LG Solutions, LLC. And he's from Pittsburgh, which, if you guys remember the Badgers from Pittsburgh as well. And, of course, I know a lot of great quarterbacks come out of Pittsburgh. So, David, tell us again about the company, and if somebody wanted to reach out to you, how would they get a hold of you, and what would they do?
Yeah, like you said, the company is called 3LG Solutions, and the website's www.3lgsolutions.com. My number is 412-290-6955. Call me anytime. That's my my direct line, and we help companies with their culture change and engagement, change leadership strategies, leadership skills. We do training, facilitations, and consultations, and we're committed to help companies and their leaders succeed in the best way possible. And so we're excited about it. We're ready to roll, and if anybody's interested in free consultation, you can certainly call me directly at 412-290-6955, or just go to my website, www.3lgsolutions.com.
Now, Dave,
go
ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
So if you were saying, I like what you're doing, and I get it. I use a lot of your philosophies when I'm teaching people how to trade and things like that. So if you were to lay out, obviously everybody's a candidate to talk to you and to be part of your business that you could help. But if you were to lay out somebody who was the ideal client who should be calling you right now, what would that look like?
be a client, to be a business that is looking and needing and wanting to change something, big changes. And this is a company that would need to get their people involved, get their people understanding what, you know, what's happening, what's changing, and have them buy in to this whole philosophy. And that's the strength of the executive leadership. You know, the executive leadership is the number one factor. If the executives don't buy in to this, then the change really doesn't work that well. So they really have to buy into it. Then from there, then they have to get their people involved. And I think that's the companies that we work with, is the ones that are really committed to, you know, say, okay, we're going to make this change. We need the help. We understand that the outside help is really important. And, you know, without it, like I said, 70% of all change initiatives fail. And you got to recognize that, because that's some pretty horrible odds when a company says, oh, no, we have to make a big change. It's like 7 out of 10 times we're not going to get there. So it does make sense to have an outside, you know, company, consultants come in and really kind of help with this, that are experts in the field, to be able to make that make that change and help that growth.
And I mean, it is about growth. And I mean, look at it, companies are in business to make money, and a guy like you who can help them turn the corner, because a guy like you can be the difference between a failing company and a company that can turn into a success. And I think that, you know, it's kind of like a great coach who can take that athlete to the next level. You are like a great coach who could take that company to the next level, correct?
Yeah. I think, you know, I think the coaching part of that, I'm glad you mentioned coaching, because, you know, with, you know, coming in and doing, you know, a training or a facilitation one or two times really isn't that effective. I mean, you really need the ongoing coaching. You know, you're taught something, right? A coach teaches you, you know, whatever that would be, and they says, "Okay, well, here, I just showed you, so I'm going to leave now." And you're caught with the ball in your hand, going, "Okay, Sean, okay, the best bet is like a computer program, right? You just learn it, and you really need someone to kind of reinforce that. Okay, if it's sport, or if it's a different program or something, you need the ongoing remedial training and education to be able to kind of really master it. And I think with change, this is something that, you know, people come in, they do these, like, you know, great, you know, leadership, you know, seminars and trainings, and they pound their fists and do this. That's great. I think it's really inspirational. But to really kind of make it work, you need a coach to kind of tweak it. You know, yeah, you got to try this. Did you try that? Let's try it this way. And then over time, you flush out the bugs, and then you're able to kind of really make it work. And that's where someone from the outside looking in can really make a difference, because they have an objective look. When you're in the storm of change, then it's really difficult, because you can get lost. And so you need someone to say, look, you know, did you notice this? Because a lot of it, you know, isn't self-help, it's self-realization, where you're realizing, oh, okay, I didn't realize that. And you say, oh, okay, then, you know, let me try it this way then. And so that makes it, you know, much, much more effective. And that's what, you know, we do well.
Well, yeah, because again, you know, it's not like a football game where you can, you know, get like the Super Bowl. They got, you know, Bill Belichick, one of the greatest coaches, got the team prepared for that second half. Now, he's always preparing, but he had them ready to go for that second half and got them in the game. Whereas in business, it's every day. The game is every day. There is not a day off from the game. You're always playing the game, whether you're preparing for it or you're getting ready to go for it. And these are things that you kind of bring to the attention as an outsider looking in, because you have a much more of objective view of what's going on, correct?
Yes, that's exactly right. And if you're able to, you know, take that feedback and implement that and trust that feedback, because you, like I said, you have to be able to measure it. You got to be able to look and see, okay, are we moving closer or further away from our goals, and then make adjustments, because things aren't so smooth all the time. It isn't you just go from, you know, from point A to point B and you're there. You cycle through things, and over time, You know, as long as you stay on track, then you're eventually going to get there. But, you know, change is messy. And it just doesn't, there's certain, you know, philosophies and research that shows that any transformational change is really something that is just an absolute mess until you realize, look, we got to do this. And you go, you struggle, you have to struggle through it to make it work. And it's just not easy. And having somebody come in and help you through that makes it easier, but you still have to do the work.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, listen, as I like to say, there ain't no free lunch and nobody's passing out $100 bills on the street corner. So it takes work to get it done. So you got the outside view, bringing in the perspective of A, someone who's experienced in understanding how the model works. And then you're trying to help create for those employers a better way to run their model. Because, again, what you opened up with is that a lot of the executives typically are more of a weight on their employees or their team than they are a help. And we have to get away from the hindrance of keeping people down and helping lift them up. What do you think?
Yeah. You know, it really does come full circle because, you know, when you're looking at being in a leadership position, you know, your main job is to really inspire, right? I mean, you really have to get people motivated. And have that vision, and you have to have a clear vision, because if you don't have that clear vision and you can't communicate that vision, then others are just going to swim around and there's no place to go. So it's that type of idea where you really have to believe in what's going to happen. It's going to work, right? And then you're going to have to say, okay, this is where we're going to be. This is our vision, and here's how we're going to get there. And I want you to help me get there. And so then you get that buy-in, because now it's like, I need, you know, the press secretary, Sean Spicer. He was at one of his,
David, I'm sorry, we're going to have to cut it short, but we'd love to have you back again if you'll come back with us again. This is David Losshelder from 3LG Solutions and also the author of Take Care of Number One So You Don't Step in Number Two. David, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz. Make sure you go to libertytalk.fm and download the show every single day, as well as The Sporting Edge. And also, my brand new Bubba's Bottom Line video podcast, which is available at bubbatrading.com. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. Have a great day. Thank you so much for being here. We'll see you later. Take care, everybody.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.